it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donnick, and Jace here on ESPN 102.5. The game on a fast-moving Tuesday. Whew. Man, oh man. Have we covered some ground?
I'm tired.
On today's show.
But hey, that's a part of the business.
You're young. You shouldn't be tired.
I know. Well, I might still be recovering.
Oh, well, that I understand.
Yes. Real quick, I know we're going to have Kevin Owen in just a second, but I just saw this. You'll appreciate this. Nevada sports books are reporting for the Super Bowl. They had a 12.1% win off and a handle of over $154 million. So the books had a good weekend.
I think what I saw was a little bit less bet this year than in past. Not much, but a little bit. Predators embark on a four-game road trip that starts tonight in Winnipeg against the Jets. Tonight, Preds and Jets. Thursday night, Preds in Calgary to take on the Flames. Saturday night in Edmonton. And then they'll close the trip out Monday night in Vancouver against the Pacific-leading Canucks, which is weird to say, in February. We say hello to Kevin O, who is with TSN 1290 up in Winnipeg, also does the pre and post for the Jets. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Let's start with the Dustin Byfuglien story that's been out there. This has been it was a crazy story early on in the season, so we were talking about it, and then it just kind of went away when nothing was happening. I can only imagine how much you guys have talked about it. It's resurfaced, and it looks like maybe coming to a close here soon. What are you guys hearing up there on, you know, how this is going to play out?
Good news for the Nashville Predators. Everyone else in the Central Division, if Buff walks away and doesn't play hockey this year, that appears to be where it's at. TSN's insider Frank Cervelli reported yesterday that where they're at is that both sides are working towards a mutual contract termination, a la the Ilya Kovalchuk situation in L.A. Now is Buff going to return, and this process would make him an unrestricted free agent, make him a player that he could sign anywhere and help another NHL team. Doesn't sound like it. He hasn't skated. He hasn't returned. He had ankle surgery, and with 29 games left to go, it sounds like he has come to the point and made the decision that he's not going to play hockey this year. And so if and when the paperwork all gets sorted out, they figure out and come to an agreement on how he's paid, who pays him, and what, they will mutually part ways. Dustin will become an unrestricted free agent, and the Jets will not have his services, but they will have the $7.6 million worth of cap space that is created by him not being as part of the team.
And which is vitally important for sure. So it is your understanding or your belief that you don't think Byfuglien is going to suit up and play this season at all?
That's the belief, but as I said, nobody has any facts on this, right? Dustin Byfuglien doesn't like speaking to the media when he's under contract and obligated to do so on a more than, daily basis kind of thing. It's not his thing. He's not comfortable with it. He keeps tight-lipped. He's always been a guy kind of marches to the beat of his own drum and does things on his own agenda the way that he wants to do things. So kind of understand that and know that he's been real tight-lipped. His agent, Ben Hankinson, is a great guy and would love to share, but, he works for his client, right? If Buff doesn't want anything getting out and not saying anything, then that's the case. Now, Buff, on a personal level, he runs into fans. There's been pictures all over Instagram and social media. Here's Buff at a restaurant. Here's Buff on a patio. Here's Buff at an ice fishing shack pulling in lunkers, and everybody's all happy, and he poses for pictures, stops and chats with people. He's still the most beloved player with the organization right now. But there's a segment of the fan base that are mad, right? The Jets been handcuffed. Kevin Cheveldayoff, the general manager, hasn't been able to make any moves. Everybody knows half, three-quarters of their defense is made up of waiver wire acquisitions. And Anthony Boteto, who couldn't crack your lineup for 3 or 4 years, is playing regular minutes here because they didn't have any other choice. clarity on the situation before the trade deadline is going to be huge for the Winnipeg Jets. If they're still in the fight, if they're in a wild card position, perhaps that changes their plans or allows them to pursue somebody at that point. Or maybe they stand pat knowing, you know, where they are. If they continue to lose here, as they have over the last 25 games, things haven't been good for the Jets. They may fall out. They beat the Blues last game. They're playing better hockey. I think people are taking this as an overall positive that they at least will have clarity on the situation moving into the trade deadline.
So, as you mentioned, Winnipeg and Nashville both, as we said here in early February, on the outside looking in of the playoff picture. Predators do have two games in hand on Winnipeg. What has been the storyline up there through 53 games when watching this Jets team? And look, Jets and Predators, because of what they've done the last two or three years, they've come into seasons with expectations. I know Winnipeg lost a lot of players in the offseason, but what has been kind of the talk up there to this point in the season?
Well, it's kind of changed over the course of the season because they kind of started out a little slow and then righted the ship and proved that they could kind of win with the group that they had through November and then just had an atrocious January, right? They won three games. They were 3-8-1 in the month of January, totally falling out of, you know, battling Dallas and Colorado for you know, a guaranteed spot through the Central into the wild card and now falling well below the line and into the fray with everyone else. So it's fear, it's concern. You get all the big picture talk about, you know, is the window closing? I mean, you look at the roster, the Winnipeg Jets, the skilled forwards that they have and the ages that they are. The window is not closing. The core players of this team can be very talented moving forward, but they don't have enough right now on the ice. Connor Hellebuck has been outstanding. If he's not, the Jets don't have a chance to win, and that's what they've been all season long. Thankfully, he's playing, you know, at a Vezina-caliber pace that we have come to know and expect him to do. But without that, the Jets would be in tough, and their elite scorers can't score if they can't bust the puck out of their own zone. And with the defense that they're rolling out there right now, and as good as Neil Pionk has been, who came over in the Jacob Trouba deal, they've got, you know, three defensemen in their mix that were plucked from the waiver wire, and it's just not good enough. They can't move the puck with that. They've had some other injuries. Brian Little's injury, got hit with a slap shot by his own player in the ear, perforated eardrum, knocked him out. He's been gone for 40 games now and might return late in the season, but he's not close yet. He's skating but not under contact. So it's like everybody else, right? You deal with the normal stuff that you would have day in, day out. For an NHL team, you deal with injuries and the situations that come up. But with the lack of depth that they had with the situation with Buffalo and the exodus on the blue line, they haven't been good enough in their own zone. You allow goals against, you're going to lose hockey games. That's where the Jets have been.
Kevin O with us from TSN 1290 in Winnipeg as the Jets and the Preds will battle tonight in Winnipeg. And, you know, the thing that we've been talking about here, Kevin, with this team is – you know, the two steps forward, one step back, and just the inconsistencies. And you can tell that the star players aren't playing like the star players. And I don't know if that's necessarily the same case in Winnipeg, like you were mentioning. It's a lot of the depth. It's a lot of just a lot of weird things going on. But it seems like the Central Division has just kind of been faced with that outside of a handful of teams.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, the Jets' best players have been as good as they can be under the circumstances. Mark Scheifele's putting up numbers. Blake Wheeler moved over from the wing to center in the absence of Brian Little. And, you know, the Jets have every deadline deal. It looks like they're looking for a second-line center. Well, they found it in Wheeler. The problem is that you shift him over, you've lost a 91-point right winger on your top line, the 6'5", and drives the play, right? And Patrick Laine has been a better player overall, his 200-foot game has improved. It's all the things that we were, you know, criticizing him for last year. Is that, oh, he's just a guy who can shoot and he's not getting the pucks out of his own zone and won't engage in battles and move his 6'5" frame. He's doing those things now. He's only got 19 goals on the season. You would expect more production from him. Special teams have been a problem for this Winnipeg Jets team as well. So, I mean, big picture, there's a lot of moving parts and reasons I think that they understand internally why they are where they are. Effort has not been one of them, and I think that's why Paul Maurice is keeping his job, at least for now. The team has done anything but quit on the coach. We've had real good efforts in the last four games. They lost to the Bruins before the break. They lost to Columbus and Carolina, two pretty good teams, but the effort was there. There was no quit in this team. They just might not have the horses to make the playoffs this year, and they're starting to accept that. They think they do. They think they can get there, and they played like that this week. They beat St. Louis on Saturday night and look like a team who could do that. But tonight's a huge test because what we saw against them, against Nashville, the last time these two teams played, simply wasn't good enough. Jets lost 1-0, and really it was a no-show by them. And that's been few and far between. But as tight as the standings are in the Central, you see it from everybody. Everybody's good. Everybody's flawed in the same respect. And we're seeing St. Louis fall off. They've only won one of their last six now, and the Jets beat them. It wasn't handily on Saturday night. It was 3-0 lead. It got to 3-2, and then the Jets added a couple empty netters. As we know, anybody can beat anybody on any given night. A best of seven, a different situation. But you got to get to the playoffs to play a best of seven, don't you?
You kind of alluded to it. My next question on Paul Maurice and whether his seat is hot. I know you said right now he seems to be safe, but do they have to make the playoffs for him to stay the head coach?
Well, from what we understand, he does not have a contract going into next year. So he has not been officially extended. If something's happened behind the scenes, they haven't made any of us aware of it as of yet. I really thought they lost to the Tampa Bay Lightning after the loss to the Preds the last time they saw them, that 1-0 UC Saros shutout. They lost to the Tampa Bay Lightning 7-1, and I was like, oh boy, like if this continues, they'll have no other choice. The reality is the Jets are run as a group, the general manager, even the owner, the management group, they run a lot of stuff through and with Paul Maurice, who's an experienced head coach. It doesn't work the old traditional, I'm the GM and I save my job by firing the coach. It isn't exactly the way it works here in Winnipeg. It really seems like it's a consortium and that they work together as a team. And a lot of what the Jets do is built upon the philosophies of Paul Maurice. Until the players, you know, I always say that they don't quit consciously on a coach, but it's subconsciously where they start making the mistakes and not paying attention to the details. And you can tell even good coaches get fired, as Peter Laviolette finds out, as much success as they might have on their resume. The time comes for every coach. That time hasn't come yet. So the seat is hot, according to, you know, a certain segment of the fan base, as it probably always is. But within the organization, I don't think it is yet. What happens in the offseason remains to be seen.
Kevin, appreciate the visit. Should be a fun game tonight, as always. Thanks.
Always is between these two.
No doubt. Kevin O up in Winnipeg. TSN 1290, Predators and Jets tonight at 7 o'clock. Pregame at 6. We'll come back and continue our discussion. Malcolm Turner out as Vanderbilt's AD. Max Herz will rejoin the show as it has been a fast-moving day here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. News during the show. Malcolm Turner out as Vanderbilt AD. Jordan Rogers came on the show and said, it's his belief Vanderbilt doesn't want to change. They've got people in place right now that really don't have much interest in pushing forward progress, doing the necessary changes that we've been talking about for years on this show. Certainly Jordan Rogers has been talking about for years on this show. There's a lot of stuff out there floating around. Max Herz, we bring him back into the conversation. Went to Vanderbilt. Does the play-by-play for Vanderbilt women's basketball, does play-by-play on, you work a lot of the baseball games. I know you do what? Play-by-play and sidelines. You do a little bit of everything. And with that being said, the interim right now is somebody you've worked with. And in fact, you're supposed to be doing some work tonight in that realm. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, tonight I'm going to host the Vandy Women's Basketball Coaches Show. So I'm not sure what Candace Lee's media schedule looks like. I assume there will be some sort of availability sometime this week. But
I have been told, because I've already asked for her to come on the show, and that's what Vanderbilt has told me, that they're working on her availability for this week. So,
I mean, look, if nothing else, talking with the women's basketball coaches and staff and head coach Stephanie White, who will be on the show with me amongst others, they have the best possible insight in terms of Candace Lee is their sport administrator. She's also been the sport administrator for football, mm-hmm. which I think she's been for 2 years now. But for a decade and a half.
So what does that mean exactly?
So for a decade and a half, she has been the senior woman administrator, which is the most important job in her role. I believe every single athletic department has a senior woman administrator now, but she became the SWA in 2004 before most schools had a senior woman administrator. So not only does that mean overseeing all the women's sports and helping them make their big decisions, but it also means basically being in the room where the decisions happen in the athletic department, regardless of what else is going on and what sport the decisions involve. But she has been the administrator in charge of women's basketball for really her entire time working in the department.
That was a question that I wanted answered because to me, it's the athletic department. It's not just football or just men's basketball or women's basketball or baseball or bowling or tennis. It's the entire athletic department that, needs help. But I think everybody also recognizes that there are some sports that require more attention than others, more money. And I'm just curious of how she handles all of that.
Yeah. We'll see what she's afforded to do. And as I said last hour, we're going to find out how much of her personality she's able to put on it. But I think right now they're going to have to get out of the problems that have been created that forced this change, which it is not unrelated to money. So,
yeah. So, and you may not can answer this because you may not know the answer, but from a football standpoint and Derek Mason, how could you see this move affecting him? Because now somebody that has been there his entire tenure is taking over, somebody that knows him. So could that be good or bad, or we don't know yet?
I definitely don't think it's bad. I think there's a little bit more perspective involved. I think there's more understanding. And I think the thing about Candace Lee is that she really exists and operates on the ground level of Vanderbilt athletics. She has handshake, eye contact, very personal relationships with Vanderbilt's players in many, many sports. And I think that's evident, and I think she will make herself seen. I think she will be around. I think she will be methodical in terms of choosing what steps to take, especially in the beginning. But it's weird to say it's the beginning, too, because she's been doing it for almost two decades already.
Well, it's like Arthur Smith. I mean, Arthur Smith was around, he's around.
There's institutional knowledge, which is extremely valuable.
Once you become the OC, it is different.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not because you've been in the building, right? You've been behind closed doors. You've been a part of staffs. But when you become the OC in the NFL, it is different. And it's no different than this. She is going to take on a different role, and she's going to face new challenges that she's already aware of. But the question is, okay, now that you are in that spot, how do you go about trying to get change?
Yeah, and from the information we got today in the press releases that were put out by the athletic department and the university on the main Vanderbilt website, the first one about Turner resigning and the second one about Candace Lee taking the position over, this is the thing that stands out to me as valuable information. As one of her first steps as interim athletic director, Lee is assembling a working group comprising members of the Vanderbilt athletic leadership team and coaching staffs to provide input and to assist with next steps. Lee and the working group will collaborate directly with the interim chancellor and the entire university leadership team on the launch and implementation of the strategic plan for athletics. So based on this, the strategic plan is not totally going away. It just hasn't been announced yet. And now,
probably modified.
Yes, it will be modified by this group, and this is the doers group. I mean, I would imagine this contains multiple head coaches, a member or two of the athletic administration, and knowing Candace Lee, there are going to be some Vanderbilt athletes, either current or recently graduated, on this panel.
So let's go over some other things that's been out there floating around, and we haven't touched on it a bunch, but let's. We're getting new people listening constantly. So there was a baseball banquet at the Omni downtown on Saturday night that Malcolm Turner was at. He had just started as the AD a year ago. He just made it a year. And so as Vanderbilt is getting ready to kick off their baseball season, we're going to have Tim Corbin on tomorrow. Malcolm Turner, not present at on Saturday night. There was also recognition, Memorial Gym. Vanderbilt was hosting Florida. 1993 team out there being recognized. AD, not present, not there. Now there's reports that, oh, well, it would make sense. He was down in Miami at the Super Bowl.
Yeah. So Chris Lee from VandySports.com reported that today. I had heard that within the past couple of days as well. It was unclear why, but it is presumably related. But I was at the baseball banquet. I didn't see him there. I assume he's at the home basketball game. I didn't even know that reunion was going on, but Malcolm Turner has had such a heavy hand in planning those that it would be surprising if he wasn't there.
Well, Chris Lee was really a big part of a lot of this thread, all this stuff that was going on with Malcolm Turner. Chris Lee has been breaking a lot of stuff on that front. So that would go back to what we've been talking about. Okay, when did he start? Well, clearly he was way checked out, right? He's down the Super Bowl. That's where people – it's like going to the Final Four, right? If you're going to the Final Four and you're a coach, you're looking for a job. That's the place to go. If you're looking for a job in the sports industry, Super Bowl is probably a pretty good place, okay? Now, there's also stuff out there, and it seems to be – I'm seeing it more on the national level, so I want to have you weigh in on this. There's a lot of national people reporting that – I know that they're presenting this as a resignation, and it was accepted by Vanderbilt. But I've seen Jeff Goodman, I've seen Dan Wolken, and I'm trying to think who else I've seen. They are basically putting out there that he was fired.
Yeah, and I think it was in a way mutual, but I could definitely believe either end of it. I don't have any reporting that backs that up, but
maybe,
those are trustworthy
maybe
people.
Maybe nudged behind the scenes. Like this was not going
hey, this isn't gonna work.
Yeah.
And I think what you're seeing, and how many times, Darren, over the years have you seen this of there's always the rumor of, okay, there was an internal candidate or a candidate that had connections and had been working their way up, but they don't get the job initially. They make the hire, whether it's an AD or a coach. It fails, and then they go to the person that, okay, you know what, maybe we should have just gone with them all along. That's what this feels like because of the reports that, you know, Candace Lee was – David Williams was obviously very close with her and wanted her to take over, and I've seen different reports of that. And now they're going in that direction, even though she has the interim tag. Look, we have no idea how this is going to look. None of us can make that prediction. Maybe Max has a little more insight because of his involvement with the program, but I can't sit here and tell you, okay, this is going to be better until I actually see it. But it has that feel of, now there's a little bit of regret from Vanderbilt's standpoint that, okay, Malcolm Turner going outside, going to somebody that, you know, has been in the professional leagues, in the G League, maybe that was the bad move. Let's stay in the family.
I don't think it's that at all. I don't think it's regret. I think it's he pushed the envelope. He came in and he was, you know, the guy that wanted to do say, and so he made them uncomfortable.
Right.
It's not about like, oh, buyer's remorse. I don't know why we should have just gone with her. No, it's
about what
he was doing was making them uncomfortable if they're not ready for change.
And that leads them to regret because they're showing that they don't want to change. That's what I mean by
I mean, I would say to them, well, there was also change, though, within the structure of, remember, people that were in place on his hire are not in place anymore. So things changed over on the campus. I don't think it's about that. I mean, when you hire somebody, what did you think they were going to do? Come in and sit on their hands?
No, that's not how it's supposed to be.
Especially with his background?
That's not how it's supposed to be at all.
No,
I think you want them to come in and make
change. This is about people, the structure, as we've already talked about, people have changed. Okay, there are people that were in place that are no longer in place. And so now you've got all these new people, and they come in with their own philosophies and their own background and their own experiences. And all of a sudden, the landscape – look, we've all been a part of that, right? You're at a job 1 minute, and things change around you, and everything you've been accustomed to and used to is totally different.
Yeah.
And the workplace didn't change.
Sometimes that's a good thing, though.
I mean, it's the same – right, but I'm just saying it's the same building, but all of a sudden you change some people in and out, and everything's changed around you, and you're like, oh, well, this is not how we're doing things anymore. This is going to be done things this way.
Right.
So I think that's probably what happened to Malcolm Turner. I think he had obstacles to begin with, and then you start making some changes, and then the obstacles or the hills become mountains, it probably, he was looking around going, I don't think I can move these mountains.
Yeah, and, I don't think Malcolm Turner did anything that I wouldn't expect him to do. I mean, he did the things that I expect him to do when he became the athletic director. And if those things didn't pay immediate dividends or didn't please the changing look of the leadership of the university at large, then that could have had something to do with this. But again, I don't think his course of action, although much bolder in terms of engaging the outside firms in this planning, although bolder than what had been done in the past, I don't think it shocked anybody. So reversal of course.
Am I right in my concerns of, and I'm not hating on anything that happened in previous administrations with David Williams. I you know, loved David Williams. We all did. But in the thought process of, okay, if Vanderbilt wants to take steps forward, you just moved on from a guy that supposedly had a big plan. He was spending money. He was trying to put an emphasis on athletics. And you're walking away from that and you're going to somebody that has been there for a while and under the old administration. Am I right to be concerned about that? And I don't know what Candace Lee is going to be, but I just worry that there isn't a change in the way of thinking, and that's what needs to happen. That's why I'm having concerns.
I think you're right to be concerned. I would articulate the reason I'm concerned, not about who is taking over. It could be anybody who's taking over.
Yeah.
My concern is that there was a big plan. This was very obviously everybody's plan A, and 12 months later, that plan is gone. So that is my concern.
Right, and that's I share that concern.
There are many ways out, but there's going to have to be at least a little bit of backtracking from the original plan that happened, and if there wasn't going to be, this wouldn't have happened. So
more with Max Herz on the other side.
I just find there's not a lot of hope. The problem is we went out and got somebody that in real-world experiences away from sports in the manner that Vanderbilt deals with it, away from a lot of the different problems that come with college sports, a guy that had real-world success at building something and scaling something, was not able to come in and convince the financial arm, the institution of Vanderbilt, that we need to do things differently. And that's where I don't have hope. It's not that I don't believe Candace can be successful. I think Candace has every opportunity. She has everything in herself, her character, her will, her determination, her hard work. The problem is Vanderbilt. And that's always been the problem. The problem is there is a stigma and a stereotype of what spending money looks like. And there's a complacency when it comes to sports. And there will and always has been a problem with the academic side of Vanderbilt not wanting to be overshadowed by sports, and the thought that if we spend money, if we invest money in sports, we're less of an academic institution. I think you look at many programs across this country where that is just simply not true. Both can coexist. Vanderbilt can be unbelievably academic, and they can be unbelievable at sports if they choose to invest.
Strong words from former Vanderbilt quarterback Jordan Rogers, who was on the show the third hour today. And there's strong concern here. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe alongside Max Herz, who went to Vanderbilt, is now doing stuff on the Vanderbilt athletic side of things. So I'll ask you, Jordan is concerned. Others are concerned. How concerned are you moving forward?
At least a little bit. It's just an unexpected change. And when something unexpected happens, you don't really know what the next course of action is. I think we'll hear a lot within the next week or so, as everybody gets a chance to speak publicly with a little bit more of a plan in place about what happens from here, why Malcolm Turner is gone. And I think it's important that everyone with that power or the inside opportunity to take the lead here has a chance to reassure everyone, whether it's Vandy fans, general people who are working there, what's coming next. So I think it's important that we give everyone that chance to speak, but I think we also need to hear a little bit of a what and a why, concretely.
She's been around, so she understands the lay of the land. She signed up for this, so we know her heart's in it. We know how she feels about the university. But I wonder how much this perspective, because, yeah, you're in the inner workings, yeah, you're behind closed doors, and so you know what's going on, but if you're not in that lead dog role, you can't you can't feel the same way as when you're in the lead dog. Right? It's like, I hate to keep going back. It's like the Arthur Smith reference. Like, you can say, I can't imagine. I don't understand really why we're doing these plays right here on offense. But it's like you could go home with that. But in the end, it's like you're not the offensive coordinator, so it's not really affecting your job. I mean, your job is the tight ends or whatever. And so you've got your little area. But when you become the OC, now you are overseeing. It is your responsibility. So now that you've moved into that role, maybe concerns that you had or things that you saw, you're like, man, that's, gosh, I hate that, or I don't like that, I can't believe that, but it's not on my watch. But now it is. So I wonder how she feels knowing that.
I would say there was very little that happened in the last 3 to 5 years, just to throw a ballpark range out there, of David Williams' AD tenure that Candace Lee was not almost a total equal part of in terms of decision-making, and not at least in on in terms of informed. And Chase mentioned earlier that Casey Hayward tweeted that his last conversation with David Williams before he passed away was that David wanted Candace to succeed him. And operating that way, he operated as if that were true.
Yeah.
I would say from my experience and my knowledge, they were together on so many issues, so many conversations, and I can't speak for Malcolm Turner's tenure, and I don't think it was the exact same way, but so much of what David Williams did, what he considered, what he thought, and what he preached, Candace was in on 100% every step of the way, and that was purposeful.
I wonder how much she was in on what Malcolm Turner was doing.
I would say less.
Considerably?
I don't know. That I don't know. They had a great relationship. I know that for a fact. But, I mean, it's different, and it was still new, too. I mean,
yeah, he was there
wasn't
year.
Even a routine set. Right. So, I mean, it's almost irrelevant, you know, that part of it.
Yeah, but I think it goes along the lines of what we've been talking about, of how he just – he did a lot of stuff behind the scenes, and you know, it played it close to the vest, which in some ways is a good thing. Some ways, not so much.
He operated like the world that he came from, which is a major professional sports league.
He operated like a commissioner,
and in many ways, the choices and the hires that he made about the men's basketball team were run like an NBA team.
Yeah,
and it seems like at least in the short term, those things haven't led to any success.
Max, let's finish up with this because I know Jerry Stackhouse is going to speak over on campus in about 45 minutes or so, and I know you've got to get to that. People, I always say on the show, people have power. People, a lot of people out there, fans, think that they don't have power. They have power. You do have power. Okay, you can send a message. There are a lot of frustrated Vanderbilt fans, a lot, listening to this radio show right now. I know. I've heard from them a lot over the years. Willie has heard from them a ton over the years. Things are not going to get any better, especially when this stuff is out there. Well, we talked about, can the commissioner, can the SEC office, the fans, what is it going to take maybe for a change in mentality over on Vanderbilt? Maybe, like, you don't have to go, because Jordan was right. Like, the whole, like, keeping up with Alabama, that's ridiculous. You don't have to keep up with Alabama. That's silly. Okay, nobody's saying keep up with Alabama. Nobody's saying keep up with LSU, okay? But there can be some middle ground. You don't have to be, as Jordan said, they're 14th, and they're 14th all by themselves. And then 13-1 is in another group, right, what they're doing. There can be some middle ground. How do you think they go about trying to get to that middle ground? Not be Alabama or LSU, but get to that middle ground.
They got to find some sort of foolproof plan, because I think they took on a lot of risk and spent more money than they wanted to over the last year, and that's what led to this. So I think a less risky approach while adhering as much as possible to what they were going to do with the facilities plan could still happen. And I think upgrades to football were going to be at the top of that. Upgrades to their daily facility, not to the stadium. Upgrades to their daily facility, which would help recruiting, at least in their estimation. I think that still has to be the next step, but it's a matter of, is this new group that's been assembled of decision makers, mostly pre-existing decision makers, are they going to say, we can start going ahead with bits and pieces of this, or we got to wait, or we got to drum up some money to do it? A lot of different things could be in play.
This is a day of breaking news.
No kidding. My goodness. Just save it.
I will.
We'll save it for the other side. Holy crap. There's big news out of East Lansing we'll get to in just a minute. All right, last thing. What do you? He's going to get pressed, okay? I hope he knows that. Like, what do you think Jerry Stackhouse is going to say in 45 minutes? He's going to get asked a lot about everything we've been talking about all day. How do you think he's going to handle that?
I truly have no idea.
Yeah.
I really don't know. And I think a legitimate concern now is Jerry Stackhouse invested in Vanderbilt? I mean, he was here as a partner of Malcolm Turner's, and they were partners for what seemed like they wanted to be the long term. And I mean, if just like Malcolm Turner could probably go back into major pro sports or into a conference office pretty quickly with his experience, Jerry Stackhouse could be an NBA head coach pretty quickly if he wanted to and made himself available for it. So I think that's a legitimate concern. I think Stackhouse has been very open with the media this year when they have at least spoken his language and not been redundant in terms of asking him to rehash things that he's already explained. So I would expect him to be at least a little bit candid in all this, but I mean, he is plot 1A here, I would say.
Well, we're about to find out in 45 minutes. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Max Herz, who will not be the last time you hear him on the show talking about this particular subject matter, and we appreciate him stepping in here. There's huge news. A major college football coach is out. We'll tell you who we're talking about on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, keeping with the theme today, more breaking news. Mark D'Antonio out at Michigan State. Apparently has just stepped down.
The timing on this is just crazy, though. I mean, National Signing Day is tomorrow, and I know they've signed.
I know.
You know, they've signed. Most schools have signed a majority of their classes, but, you know, I feel like this is not a surprise, but the timing of it all is a surprise.
I would agree with that.
That's the best way to answer it.
He's been there 13 years.
Yeah, and he was there. He was on Saban's staff when D-Mace was there. Is I think the DB's coach or assistant DB's coach or something like that. But, I mean, he's been involved with the university for a while.
But so, he is out no longer.
Yeah. So who's the next? I mean, that's a pretty big job.
They've been on a little bit of a decline here of late.
Since the playoff. It seems like it's gone downhill.
When they got smoked by Alabama in Dallas.
Yep.
Yep.
It's just kinda gone downhill.
Hasn't been the same. Of course, downhill, it depends on who you talk to. It's really because of his body of work, right? I mean, he's built it up, so the standards are really, really high. Not that they didn't have standards at Michigan State, but I'm just saying he had built it up where they expect to be there contending with the Ohio States of the world and Penn State and, you know, Michigan. They don't need to take a backseat to anybody and compete for the conference and playing in playoffs.
So they're calling this a retirement, essentially. But how much of a decision, how much of his decision was it? Was it forced? You know, with all those
there's
things.
There's been a lot of stuff going on at Michigan State.
And he's been connected to some
over
of
the
it,
years.
So.
Yep. Like again, you said, just a weird timing the day before National Signing Day Part 2.
Right. 114-57 during his time there. And as you said, he's been there since 2007. Was at Cincinnati before that. He was with Michigan State from 95 to 2000 as the DB's coach. So spent a lot of time there. So who's next? Like I said, that's a pretty good job.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty
the
good
Big
job.
Ten. So, but you're at the point now where, you know, the coaching staffs are being finalized. I mean, you've kind of gotten to the point where you almost have to go the interim route with somebody that's already on staff, unless, you know, I just walked in the office, Ryan Porth, of course, who's a big Cincinnati Bearcats fan, said, I hope Luke Fickell doesn't get a call for that job. I think there's a chance he could.
Well, the two names you'll see right away are Luke Fickell and Pat Narduzzi.
Yeah.
Pat Narduzzi will probably be the
one.
Yeah.
Do you like that hire? If they make that hire?
Well, he understands the program.
Yeah. Definitely does. So you go with some experience there. But, yeah, I agree. You know,
He's been good at Pitt.
Yeah. And I'm surprised that Luke Fickell, to be completely honest, didn't get another job when some of these were open. I guess he likes the situation that he's in at Cincinnati. But if it's one of those two, I don't think that's a bad hire at all for Michigan State, considering – you know, the timing of it all and the circumstances. So, but like we said, we've pretty much been going with breaking news the entire show, and I think it's only fitting that we end with it, even though it's not local, like the Malcolm Turner situation, but ending with it with Mark D'Antonio being out, retiring as the head coach at Michigan State, and we know a few people connected to that university, including our own Derek Mason from the morning show, of course, played there. So I'm curious to hear his thoughts tomorrow on what he thinks about this with Mark D'Antonio stepping down.
Hey, if you get a chance today, I'm going to let you read this as I have a little coffee.
Yeah, you're having a hard time.
Tell people they can text for some tickets.
They can. So we have our text line that we have worked in, 615-737-1025. You can text the keyword boxing to 615-737-1025 for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Caleb Plant take on what do we say his last name? Vincent Feigenboots?
No. Feigenboots.
In the Super Middleweight World Championship on Saturday, February 15th at Bridgestone Arena. So you do not want to miss the return of big time boxing to Nashville, featuring hometown hero Caleb Plant. Just text the keyword boxing to 615-737-1025 for your chance to win.
Who knows what we'll be talking about tomorrow?
Yeah. I mean, do we have more?
Is there more breaking news?
Are the Titans going to hire a defensive coordinator, or is it going to be Mike Vrabel?
Probably. Would it surprise you?
No. I don't know if I like that, though.
I don't either.
Think he's got enough to deal with as the head coach?
Me too.
People behind the glass don't like it either.
He's seen Bill Belichick.
I know.
Do it, so.
And Belichick did it, has pretty much been doing it since Patricia left.
Belichick is a long-time seasoned head coach. Mike Vrabel will be going into year three.
Vrabel was a DC for 1 year.
Yeah, I don't love it. But I suspect that's probably where he's going to go. Well, that is going to do it for our wild and crazy four-hour show today. It is in the books. You have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Stay tuned. Jared and the GM is next.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No